Thank you. Our presentation begins slightly before our program started, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to start with a backstory. It begins in an information management consultancy role, a history that other people on my team share. Working in those days, we were responsible for a number of successful projects. However, a common and disturbing trend followed those projects, which was a couple of years after a successful implementation, we started noticing that the project started failing. And this is a really big issue because these projects never actually realize benefits. They're often projected to be realized about 5 or so years down the line. People often speak about this not too unfamiliar curve of project failure as a lack of adoption. And most recently, we had an opportunity to try a different approach, namely to focus on internal capacity, culture, and behavior rather than on externally imposed projects as a means of delivery. The basic concept was to have a long-term program with an open, flexible roadmap, and we had an idea of where we wanted to go, even if we may not have had the funding in the beginning. So this is our story. To begin with, we wrote a manifesto, and it was very high level. Our goals were to address the challenges imposed on government by technological trends. Our plan was to deliver technology that will underpin cultural change. And we wanted to do this not once, not twice, but indefinitely. So namely, we were focusing on a cultural shift. The following is what our approach resulted in and the successes that we have had to date. This is our Electronic Document and Records Management Program, or EDRM program. First of all, when we speak about our EDRM program, we actually refer to 10 to 15 whole of department business, performance improvements, and technology projects. We often abstract this to a few of our signature projects, which are on the slides before you. So over the past 5 years, our program of work introduced information management as a concept to the department and retired network drives in favor of adopting a centralized document management system. It retired information silos and implemented a collaborative security model, one that was aligned with the New South Wales Information Security Guidelines. It introduced a mobility platform for DPC staff to work from anywhere via Citrix or from any DPC mobile device. It digitized our paper record holds and introduced a single, generic, completely electronic approval process for all of the department's processes. It transitioned our correspondence management processes to digital practices, and it instated countless revisions of whole of department and business critical processes throughout each of these initiatives. For our department, our executive and overall benefits realization, this translates roughly to systems that have 100% adoption, or as close as possible for us to be able to claim that. An improved execution time for our key processes. They're 36% quicker across the board, and some have demonstrated a 3-time improvement in speeds. 95% of our information is now managed electronically, and resultantly, our record-keeping compliance is through the roof. 94% of our ministerials are now delivered on time. Our briefing quality has improved. The return rates from the Secretary's office have halved. And we've removed the printing of 12,000 pieces of correspondence annually in favor of digital delivery. We have also reduced our on-site paper requirements by 70% or more and can work in an activity-based environment. And we have also sustained this change because since we've gone through our paper independence, our on-site records requirements have grown by a statistically insignificant 0.6%. So these were cultural and changes in business improvements. Coincidentally, just so that I don't leave the impression that we have endless amounts of funding, each one of these program years was delivered at an underspend. And each one of these program years also delivers real cost value to the department. So in last year, we reduced our paper storage costs by $200K to $300K in real cost terms. We also reduced our record-keeping management costs by $200K, again in real cost terms, and we're on target for a further cost reduction of another $200K this year. Combined, this means that each project or the entire program will deliver a real cost return on investments after 3 to 5 years. And on top of this, we have also introduced a conservatively estimated efficiency savings of in excess of $1 million to the departments. I would like to draw your attention to the grey bars in the background of my slides. There are user adoption metrics, and as I mentioned, they're roughly at about 100%. The use of our systems was never mandated throughout this period. So to set the tone for the presentation, While we focus on enabling good governance and compliance, these are not compliance projects. They're business enablement projects, and they rely on delivering value to users, which is reflected through their willingness to use our systems. We also saved our favorite metric for last. This year, when we asked DPC staff the question, what do you find most frustrating about our EDRMS? In an optional survey, 30% replied with, nothing, I quite like it. This means that one in three people at our department can think of no way that their working environment can be improved at the moment. And this approval rating has grown by 8% year on year for the past 3 years and has bucked that not too unfamiliar project curve of limited adoption. So, with my backstory out of the way, I would like to introduce our department's presentation and speakers. Our department is the Department of Premier and Cabinet. It is the lead agency for a number of New South Wales government programs and services. We work in diverse areas such as events, cabinets, regulation, social and economic policy, communications, international engagement, as well as provide support for the Premier. We are the EDRM team, and our team consists of three permanent staff and up to three contract staff, and we support 500 DPC staff in their information management and business project delivery. My name is Mitya. I have been introduced already. I'm the EDRM business manager, and today with me I have Nadine Louie, who's our internal projects and change officer, and David Phillips, our technical analyst and project manager. I would also like to take this opportunity to mention our other teammates who contributed greatly to our program but are not up here to speak. So Sophie Whelan and Sonia Chanchi, our business and analyst support officers. Sandra Wheeler, who's busily training as the training and support officer. Virginia Tinson, who is our director of governance for the duration of the program, nurtured and supported our vision. And finally, David Schneider, who is the CIO at the department, continues to support our program. In this three-part presentation, I will speak to you about our program strategy, our internal vision, and the concepts underpinning our program. This is the high-level stuff. Nadine will speak to you about our brand management approach, building a brand, which is the marketing, change, support, training, and culture bloodline of our program. And Dave will introduce you to one of our signature projects. This is the delivery aspect of our program, or where the rubber hits the road. So, without further ado, here's our actual presentation. As I mentioned, we wanted to try a different approach, focus on internal capacity and culture rather than externally imposed change. This is because, to begin with, too many of us face challenges of attempting to sell large one-off programs of work. I will mention four elements that make relying on an agreed, executive-endorsed, or externally driven initiative a dangerous approach. First, to quote Donald Rumsfeld, there are known unknowns. That is to say, to presume that we can explicitly define what is needed to change a culture of a department is an ambitious statement, and information strategies must, fundamentally, change culture to be effective. Second, the landscape in which we work continually changes, and priorities of one executive do not necessarily translate into the priorities of another. At our departments, we have seen four department heads and almost a two-time full changeover of our senior executive, which is a common issue for programs that are attempting to gain momentum. Third, large programs of work are a necessity in our fields, but the return on investment is not immediate, and quite often not associated with the implementation of the technology. It's rather associated with the use of that technology and the inventive ways of applying it to your processes. When you implement a successful program, you may still fail to realize any benefits for two or more years. And four, strategies need to be equally driven from the bottom up as from the top down. An information strategy needs to be owned by information professionals in much the same way that an economic strategy needs to be owned by an economist. This is what enables informed strategies. On this last point, as an anecdote, an interesting question that I was asked when pitching a project was, did they being the executive, ever ask for this? And the honest answer is that often no, nobody has asked for these projects. This is because usually no interest is paid to any element of a roadmap or a strategy up until it begins to change or demonstrate changes to a cultural landscape. And in a circle, this brings us back to Donald Rumsfeld again, because there are also unknown knowns. There are things outside of everyone's direct area of expertise, unknown to that person, but well known to the subject matter experts around them, and a good program needs to address this gap. So here is our approach to minimizing these risks. I would like to stress that we don't ever shy away from executive support, requests, or direction. We simply don't stop without it. We focus on doing things, generating momentum, finding solutions or better ways of doing things, and then seek formal agreements. We term this a cultural adoption approach strategy because we seed the culture of the department with our ideas and solutions in order to demonstrate value of adopting different behaviours. To understand the strategy is to understand that in each business problem, there are, in the very least, two problems. That of the executive and the sponsors, and that of the rest of us. We have an outward public-facing business problem that we need to address. These are things that translate into monetary and efficiency savings that we spoke about at some point and at what's often associated with business case, reducing paper on site, improving performance, improving compliance, and so forth. We also have our own business problem that we're trying to solve. This problem is, how does everyone need to behave in such a way that we can resolve that first executive problem? Solving or promising to solve the first problem, or the executive one, will get you funding. Solving the second problem, or our problem, in a non-compliance-driven way will produce you more opportunities, build you momentum, get you support in difficult situations, provide demand for further investment and creative initiatives, and so on. A strategy based on cultural adoption is one that considers the second problem consistently as a means of solving both issues. There are five themes that we promote in using a cultural adoption strategy. Acting like a consultancy, focusing on engaging as many people as possible, using flexible planning, delivering standardized solutions, and the use of iterative delivery and all of the above. Our basic approach to delivering value to all involved is simple. We pretend to be a consultancy. Our executive goals are much the same of a consultancy. We minimize costs, we improve operations, improve efficiency, and so forth. But our real goals are to get more customers, keep them happy enough to use our solutions, and convince them to see value in further business. This is where consulting bonuses come from. To achieve our goals, we focus on a simple cycle. You have to win business, and it's always small because it's never handed to you. You have to deliver once you've won that business, and you have to deliver consistently. And you have to use that delivery to produce more opportunities to win larger and larger business. As an example from our program, our first project was to try information management with a couple of areas of our departments. We delivered, and people were happy. We used their comments to generate opportunities with other teams and convince them to try it. We delivered again, repeat until critical mass. And this is how we built support for the investment in our program. Started very small, which leads me to our next topic. There is a huge power in numbers, and the more people you can get engaged, the better chance you have of meeting your goals. The basic idea is that if you can get many people using your systems happily, even if it's by making concessions at first about their thoroughness of using these systems, you can set yourself on a long-term trajectory for success. The more people use it, the more they influence others around them to use it, eventually achieving that critical mass. It is also easier to improve and deliver benefits with a large number of users. The more people you have doing something, the greater your return on investment becomes for small improvements that you make for those people. As an example, if you have 10 people using a system perfectly, there's no room for improvements. If you have 100 people using the system with 10% effectiveness, you're still at the same point from a benefits realization perspective. But you can iteratively improve these users, and each percent improvement will deliver you additional benefits. Our planning in this environment is based on a flexible planning approach. We have a strategic roadmap, but it's quite a bit like playing with Lego blocks. We have a vision for an end state, but a flexible approach to getting there. So we break down initiatives into small blocks, which are projects, and define them in one page or an email or whatever it takes. We use these small blocks to create our end state. So then we tear it down every time something changes, reprioritize, and rebuild it again. So it may look different, but the blocks are still the same in your program. We continually replenish our stock of blocks, discuss opportunities with the business, structure project concepts, and place them on our roadmap. We deliver features where we can and focus on gaining momentum. And this approach also has one other positive effect. From time to time, close to the end of financial year, you may find an area in your business that has an underspend. When you have a documented, ready-to-go project with an idea, it's actually quite easy to get those funds reappropriated before they're wasted, and then you're ready to go. I'll also stress that with these projects, you must always deliver. So you make the project small, and my team is very familiar with the phrase I constantly use, minimum viable solution. You have to define what the minimum is that you can deliver and absolutely deliver it, and then you can consider and prioritize what other added value can be added to that solution. The concept of delivering something once and then improving it iteratively, i.e. adding value to it, is the iterative delivery concept that is an essential part of our strategy. The question we always ask is, how can we improve this? So when we deliver something, we have a baseline of what we're changing, we implement some sort of change, we measure, both subjectively and with data, and compare to the previous state. If it's successful, you keep it. If not, you revert back. Then, if it has been successful, we will repeat this process for improvement sometime down the line when the opportunity arises again. And this works at all levels for us. We refine what is needed at a program level based on what we're learning about the department's priorities and arranging our blocks. We refine delivery at a project level, so once we've delivered that minimum viable solution, what can we do to improve it slightly? And we refine it on a day-to-day level in our team, which is what are the small things that we can do better, or what are the small things that are worth trying? This approach is also about controlled risk. So the ideas that we present are not actually always spot on. So recursiveness allows you to test out the conjectures that you have at a low risk, revise it, or even proceed down a different path altogether. We've changed projects, and we've even walked away from some before. Finally, everything that is delivered should be standardized. And every time you iterate, you should try and bring people's behaviors closer to that standard. For example, you identify commonalities in processes and systems. Then you begin to execute certain steps across processes in similar ways, or reuse solutions for multiple problems. Our standardized approval solution addresses fundamental problems equally well in the diverse fields of cabinet, policy, advice, ministerials, and HR without any process-specific alterations to it. It is a fine balance between delivering what the users say that they want and getting everyone to work the same way. So we consult, engage, test with users, pilot, and we design for their needs. But we do not build a solution for that one problem that those five users identified somewhere. We also market, we sell our ideas, we negotiate, we persuade their opinions, and drive for compromises, which allow us to sell standardized behaviors that support our broader strategy. In initial deployments, we begin by making concessions to the users. We standardize as much as practicable and accepted. Then, we return to the solutions later and make further standardizations. Often, we will speak to different groups, find the best idea, and then try to sell that idea to everybody else around them. Once enough people agree, it becomes a standard, and it is tightly linked to that iterative approach. This is because information projects have an incredible knock-on effect on support. So deviation from commonalities, in any way, create permutations which are difficult to support in the long term. They're initially understood, but as your function matures, they start placing pressure on support and training that becomes unmanageable. Standardizing practices means that people are comfortable applying solutions to multiple things, as they all have similar steps and a low learning curve. It also means your solutions are easier for you to support. And finally, the best ideas are actually promoted and tend to prevail over time because you're taking everybody else's ideas and applying them to a broader mass. So, to recap and summarize, to understand our cultural adoption strategy is to first understand that in each business problem, there are in the very least two problems, that of the executive sponsors and that of the rest of us. Success is resolving our problem in a way that falls within the tolerance levels of the executive and the sponsors. To be successful on this, you have to live on the razor's edge. You have to win business, deliver on your promises, and use the successes to produce more opportunities. You need to focus on numbers first, then iterative refinements to achieve standardization of what you're delivering. And we need to leverage flexible planning, and be always ready with our own ideas or other people's ideas of what can be done better. And finally, we need to be ready to negotiate, persuade, or sell good ideas to everyone around us. And now, if you recall our parallel to acting like a consulting company, there was an element that was overlooked, and it is so critical to the approach that we would dedicate an entire segment to it. It is the brand. Managing your brand is paramount. It is your advertising and marketing arm and what allows you to produce opportunities for projects in a program. It is also an exceptional tool for management of your function. A brand can be damaged by the slightest failure in delivery, support, training, change, or performance of your team. If you monitor your brand, you will have an overview of all of these critical components, like a dashboard. Management in our subjective field is not solely about numbers. The perception of your team by others tells you a lot about your overall performance. That is why we nurture our brands and why we're so proud of our current 30% approval rating. And with this, I would like to hand over to Nadine, who will tell you about brand as a key to success.
Okay, I'm going to talk about brand strategy, what it means to us, why it's important, and take you through our EDRM team brand. So what's brand strategy? It's a personality, a reputation, a whole experience. It's the warm and fuzzy feelings you associate with a particular brand, why some people are Apple and others Android. What it's not is traditional change management. It doesn't just happen during projects, but before, between, and after. And it means absolutely nothing if you can't deliver what you say you're going to and support it. Why is having a brand strategy important? It's that instant recognition that makes people unquestionably buy what you're selling. It helps build relationships with your stakeholders and customers so they trust you. Some might call it manipulation. But before you get too worried, let me take you through the whole EDRM team experience, and you can decide whether we're on the side of good or evil. So as a new starter at the department, your login to our EDRM system will be set up, and you'll probably already have a welcome email sitting in your inbox. The email contains your login details, links to our intranet pages, information about training, guides, and our contact details. If we don't hear from you, our trainer will follow up with a courtesy phone call to see if you're interested in doing some training and discuss what we have on offer. After a lovely chat, you book into one of our regularly scheduled training sessions. You attend Foundation Skills, so it's a hands-on classroom session that takes you through how we use our EDRMS at the department. If you're an enthusiastic learner, at the end of the session, our trainer shows you how you can access our online resources on our intranet. She might also suggest that you look into becoming a branch champion. A few weeks later, our trainer will check in with you to see how you're going and whether you've settled in and see if you need a refresher. This is usually done on a one-on-one basis. So anytime a staff member has a question or usually a problem, they contact us at the EDRMS help desk. For example, let's say you've accidentally deleted a document, you remember seeing some contact details on your desktop, and relief, there's our number. You call us in a panic, we answer promptly, tell you not to worry, happens to everyone at least once. And within 10 minutes, the document is restored and you're happily working on it again. So when we're in project mode, if you're a member of one of our project control groups, we meet with you regularly. Our meetings have clear agendas, minutes, and actions. We're organized, on time, and prepared. We have a running joke that Mitcha can't host a meeting without drawing a timeline of some sort. He even does it in other people's meetings. The experience of a DPC staff member when we're running projects means you'll receive regular communications from us throughout the duration of the project. They'll explain what's happening, why, when, and how it's going to affect you. We take a multi-channeled approach to our communications. So that means emails, news articles, videos, classroom training, posters, face-to-face meetings, online guides in varying formats, and demonstrations. At the end of a project, it's nothing but praise from us, and we show the department what it's achieved with more emails, maybe a news article, usually with some fancy statistics and graphs. There's a reason businesses have marketing departments. They work. So we promote everything we do transparently and realistically. At times, possibly to the point of annoyance, but staff are never uninformed. You're probably thinking, this sounds a lot like change management. And part of it is, but it's also much more. Change management happens when you've already won the business. Brand strategy happens outside of projects, and it's about winning and retaining business. So what's underpinning this whole experience? Our branding. So these are the elements that make us instantly recognizable to the business. Firstly is the tone of our communications. So a lot of the projects we're delivering to staff are non-negotiable. They have to get involved. So your tone of voice can help soften this blow. All of our communications are consistent, succinct, knowledgeable, but also conversational and fun. We use the right language and we try to avoid jargon. Second is our marketing collateral. So every single communication we send out is branded. We have branded templates for almost everything we do. Part of this consistent look and feel is achieved by having a branding guide. You can see that all of our projects have individual logos, but you can tell that they all belong together. Thirdly is our interactions with people. So we come in contact with staff through the EERMS help desk. It's our dedicated support mechanism in which we provide customer-oriented support. We're empathetic, proactive, and super friendly. We're on a first-name basis with people. We might have a chat with them, ask them about their weekend. It's much harder to yell at someone when you're super friendly. The training we offer is professional and flexible. We have regularly scheduled classroom training and customized training to suit the particular person and their needs. For example, video conferences for our regional staff or tailored one-on-ones with people who really need help with a particular process or a time poor. Our community of practice is made up of our branch champions and project control groups. So branch champions are self-nominated staff from each branch. They're our go-to person. We provide them with additional training and resources. We schedule quarterly meetings with them and discuss our planned program of work and ask for suggestions and feedback. We often bribe them with cake. Project control groups are made up of senior representatives from across the department or subject matter experts, depending on the project. Collectively, they help us make the big decisions. So all of these elements, the tone of our communications, our visual branding, and how we interact with people, work together to build a coherent brand. So this is a brand strategy that works for us because it reflects our styles and suits our personality. And it works. People trust us. We've created a community and a feeling that we're all contributing to a common goal. We also deliver on our promises and support the changes we've put in place. I hope I saw the fact that it's much more than change management, as it starts before engagement and continues long after. You can create whatever brand you like. Find a voice. Be transparent, involve staff, and provide them with feedback and support. Whatever you do, it needs to be backed up with results. And with that in mind, I'd like to hand over to Dave, who's going to talk about our signature project.
So Mitch and Nadine have spoken about strategy and concepts, but we are a delivery team. This section of the presentation is about what we delivered in terms of the signature project, EDM cases, and the approach we use to deliver projects. So one of the project drivers was moving to a new building, which saw the department embracing a more mobile and electronic working environment. This meant we were going to be activity-based working, more commonly known as hot desking. So at the start of the project, DPC was well on the way to paper independence, but critical processes were still paper-based. Everything was printed off and physically signed for approval, particularly briefs and correspondence, which is the core DPC function. So these paper briefs would go up and across the organisation for approval, getting reprinted at every stage if there was a change. So at the start of the project, Mitch asked me to replace the briefings and approval process, the paper process, with an electronic process. And he set a clear goal. He wanted the deputy secretaries at that level to approve things electronically as a minimum. And that was getting us to almost 100% of staff using the EDRMS. And he wanted it complete within 8 months. And, of course, I agreed, so we could do it. So the solution we proposed and delivered is a standardised electronic approval process for all approvals, so every process. There is one submitter and however many number of approvers. Like Mitch, I'm from a consulting background, and I've implemented many EDRM systems in the past, and hopefully I've learnt from my mistakes. And we saw from previous experience that specific process workflows might work, but they only solved one specific problem, a repeatable problem. And if you're going to do more than one process, they were expensive to implement and very complex with more than one process. The solution we delivered is also device independent. It can be used on laptops, smartphones, tablets, everywhere. This is because decisions are made via email. So this was the vision we took to the private sector to develop a product to our specification. In parallel, we presented and got in-principle approval of the design from our stakeholders. So what we'll do now is we'll look at the product, I'll show you how we submit something for approval, and then I'll show you how we approve documents, and then we'll look at the approach we take to deliver successful project outcomes. So firstly, how we submit documents for approval. So a staff member drafts a document within our EDRMS and its supporting documents. When they're ready, they select the document within the EDRMS, they right-click on it, and they click Submit for Approval. On that click, that brings up the submission dialog, and they complete a few fields. So they might drag in some supporting documents, and most importantly, they add approvers. So this might be people or roles in a particular order. When they're ready to submit, they click OK, and then that goes to the approvers. So now we'll look at the approvers. So any approver in the chain, whether they're in the middle or at the end, has the same set of actions. So the current approver can take four key actions. They can go forward with those green arrows. So when they go forward, they can either progress with no changes or progress with changes if they've made some edits to the document. They can also send it backwards to the previous approver, or they can cancel the submission altogether. So we chose email to be the interface for these decisions since our executive and everyone else was already dependent on it. The executive could use it without ever logging into or even seeing the EDRMS. But the EDRMS would still be the single source of truth and the record to capture all the metadata. So this is what we got the vendor to develop and develop the email-driven workflow solution. So now we'll look at the email. Keep in mind that they don't need to log into the EDRMS to approve. So up the top we have a subject, and that contains the name of the brief being submitted. It also says action required and a date due. There's also a header level which also says action required. It has the contact details of the EDRMS team on the left and links to our intranet instruction pages on the right. This one's with Mitya at the moment, and it's addressed to him, and only he can approve it. A bit below that, we've got the approval order. So the submitter in this case is Sophie, and then everyone else are approvers. And you can see Mitya is involved there, which means he's the final approver. And then we have a date due. In terms of the comments, up the top we have the previous person's comments first, so that is going to Mitya, and that one's from Nadine, and you can see the action that she took. And if we go a bit lower, we can see the complete story of this approval so far. So the comments from the person submitting it, and everyone else's comments in between, the action they took, when they took it, and the version of the document they made those comments against. So once you've got the story of the approval chain so far, you can go in and look at the documents. You've got a couple of options here. So these are all the documents that were submitted for approval. On the left there, you can open it within the EDRMS, or if you're working on a smartphone or a tablet, which lots of the executives do, they can click that button on the right, and that opens it in a browser on your phone. So this refers to my previous slide. So we had those green arrows, then the amber, then the red, and they're the actions you can take. So green is forward, amber is back to the previous person, and red is cancel. And then we have these additional ad hoc actions you can take. You can jump to different people in the approval path, or you can just jump all and approve. So we don't have any bottlenecks. So let's progress this one. We'll select the green button there and say progress, approval, no changes. And that just brings up an email and allows you to type a comment. In this case, because I'm acting as Mitya, if I click send there, that means that action is complete and the approval is officially approved, and that's stamped in the metadata of the document. Before you say you want it, what we know from experience is just because we've got a tool or a product, it doesn't mean it's going to work in practice. So the if you build it, they will come mentality doesn't work in our industry. It's just not enough. Delivery and quality execution of delivery is pretty hard, and you need a lot of tenacity to do it. So in this presentation, there's a risk I might make it sound easy, but because of the time limitations, I can't really go into the challenges in any detail. But what I'll be leaving out is the large analysis and design activities, the major rework and design required to support the system, changing vendors for some of the development halfway through, and challenges with the business itself. So on top of testing and prototyping the technology, we still had lots of work to do and many problems to solve in parallel. But one of the key business problems was that the core approval processes were still in paper, and there were many variations to the process. So we had policy approval, speech notes for the premier, event briefs, media releases, travel approvals, ministerial correspondence, it goes on. We just didn't know them all, and they were all individual processes. So to help the decision-making to solve that problem, we used the established EDRMS brand and the relationships within the department to form a project control group. This is made up of senior staff, directors, and managers who were very time poor to start with. They were the decision makers who were involved in each iteration of improvement. Behaving like a consultancy, the first thing we sold to them was the concept of that standardized approval solution, which was the key to the design. So we received in principle approval for that concept. We held a 1-hour meeting every 3 weeks, and before each meeting, we did lots of preparation, many hours of analysis and design, and we used data to drive decision making. And for each meeting, we did the basics. We had an agenda, we captured actions and decisions, and we really listened carefully to them. We responded to their requests and concerns. We consulted with them to select pilot branches and pilot processes based on the data. And with each deployment, we would consult with them and improve the product. So once the key decisions were made about the design and delivery dates, we ramped up the change management stream and took the solution to the established branch champions and also the rest of DPC. The first introduction of EDM cases was at a brand, as it was branded, was a DPC-wide compulsory information session. We had a fictitious and ridiculous approval example of getting a pool built on the roof of our new building. We didn't want people to pick holes in an actual business process. Also, fun is legitimately important for engagement. So over 350 hours in total were devoted to change management during this project, and this was a necessary piece to a successful solution. And as Nadine mentioned, we did posters, YouTube videos, emails, internet pages, and an e-learning module. We didn't do any hands-on training for the first department-wide rollout, but we spoke and demoed at every branch meeting and executive meeting, and in total we had face-to-face contact with 370 of the 500 DPC staff. In terms of delivery, we do phased implementations. The phases are calculated based on data gathered from business analysis, and with each phase, we aim to deliver a minimum viable solution. We're always aware of limitations at each phase, but like Apple or Google, we chose to roll out features later on and get a minimum viable solution working. For example, adding that jump to functionality was added at a later stage. So with each stage, we delivered an improvement. Also under delivery and in there, Kath and I had a baby boy, but that was factored into the project plan. Once live, we monitored the submitted workflows closely, and we watched every process ticking along, and we immediately gained insights into what the department was doing. I called up people, thanking them for their submissions and correcting things along the way. If we received a call, we immediately responded until we received this critical mass of people doing the right thing, and that intense level of monitoring lasted for about a month. So rather than calling up executive assistants in the building to find out where an approval was up to, people now called the EDRMS team. Soon we saw a brief get submitted to the secretary for approval, and we watched that one pretty closely too. And then we saw it approved by the secretary, and at that moment we were literally high-fiving and shouting in our project room because we passed our project goal. Then a request came from the secretary himself to go electronic with another business process. And then another request came from the Premier's advisors. But that was just the start. We didn't know how many processes or what it would be used for. So right now it still requires a high level of support and service to maintain the brand. And I don't think it would be possible for a team our size to support more than one standard electronic approval process. So with a very high level of support, DPC-wide approval process and project was successful. So now let's look at some stats. So apart from using on time and on budget as a measure of success, which it was, if we use adoption as a key measure of success, we can say that 100% of approvals at the department are conducted electronically, and that was the project goal. About 500 is submitted per month. DPC are now completing core processes and briefing approvals at least 30% faster than the previous process. The average time from registration to completion reduced from 9 days to 6 days. So this is based on comparing a 3-month period last year when it was paper-driven to the same 3-month period this year with the electronic environment on the same types of briefs. And it was a fairly conservative estimate too. This was never the project goal or a driver, but it was just a byproduct of the solution. We now have measurable data, and most importantly, it's accurate data. We have visibility of what the department's doing, and staff have visibility of what each other is doing. Each branch has different workloads and different priorities, and that became very clear to us. So we're using the data to drive reform. 94% of briefs meet their due dates now. This is a jump from 56% previously within a 12-week project that we undertook. Project ended, as all good projects should, and it was handed over to business as usual. It opened up other opportunities, and the most recent one around reporting to the Premier and using data to drive reform. We're still winning business and hopefully improving things.
I do hope you enjoyed that. So that was our experience and what worked for us. It was not an easy ride by any means. I hope you took that away from David's presentation. There were very many problems in getting to this stage. But to us, strategy, delivery and brand are the elements that cannot be separated. And to demonstrate this, I'm going to try and summarise our presentation in reverse order. So first, delivery underpins everything. It's important to note that delivery means standing by your promises. There's been more than one occasion where we have slightly overpromised or underestimated, and an equal number of occasions that where we ended up doing long hours or dedicating weekends to getting things done. This ability to deliver, after all, is a fundamental aspect of our brand. That's what builds trust. Being supportive, proactive, and helpful is another aspect of our brand. It builds loyalty. Those of you that have ever walked into an Apple store to exchange a product will understand what I'm saying. Your brand is built around the entire experience of you. How staff are onboarded, how support is offered, the education that is available, the assistance that you provide, the suggestions that you make, the concessions that you make, how projects are run, the engagement experience, your transparency, and most of all, your ability to seek and take feedback. Your brand is like your personality and can't really be faked. The overall strategy of our program is only there to support this environment. To us, the key concepts at all levels of our work are that there are at least two problems to everything that we do, and that normal people don't really care if the department saves a million or not. They're interested in their work. Our team is interested in both. We try to deliver solutions that solve their problems and do so in a standardized way so that we can support them effectively. We behave like a consultancy and try to live on the edge. We try to earn our business by meeting the needs of those around us and demonstrating value in our continued existence. Half of our team exists only in this temporary state. We're flexible in our planning, and we use iterative approaches not only so that we can offer, so that we can ensure we deliver something, but also to ensure that we deliver on the most prominent issue available. I would just like to thank everyone for listening to our story, and thank State Records for organising this event and providing us with an opportunity to speak. If anyone would like to get in touch with us, please feel free to do so at the following details. And finally, I'd just also like to take the opportunity to thank my team for all the hard work that they've put in on this program and for all the hard work that is upcoming for them. Thanks, everyone.